one of the great turf battles in America isn't Republicans against Democrats or the Braves versus the Dodgers. No, it's the sibling rivalry happening right in your own home. Today and all this week, we'll talk about winning the parenting home wars. Welcome to the Voice of Prophecy. This is Lonnie Melashenko. Join us today as we search for ways to make this a better world and prepare for the world to come.
Hello, friend. This is HMS Richards, Jr. All this week, as Lonnie Melashenko begins a new family series entitled Winning the Parenting Home Wars, we want to invite you to participate with us, both by tuning in all week long and also by letting us send you a special free gift. It's a delightful Better Living booklet entitled How You Can Become a Better Parent by Dr. Ann Woods Bell, a noted child psychologist. Here's our toll-free request line, 1-800-872-0055. Let me repeat that. Listen, 1-800-872-0055. Right now, let's join our program host, Lonnie Melashenko, for today's message, Dealing with Sibling Rivalry.
That's mine!
No, it isn't. It's mine. You give it to me right now.
No, I won't!
Mom!
Do these words sound familiar? Do the children that live under your roof sometimes have a hard time getting along? Do you feel like the neighbors must wonder what on earth is going on in your home? Well, friend, take heart. You know something? You're not alone. Your family, in fact, is probably no different than all of the others on your street. Chivalry may be dead, but sibling rivalry is alive and kicking. From the time a new baby enters a home, brothers and sisters struggle to understand their roles and get along. The family is an arena for the full range of human emotions, from love and affection to anger and resentment. Now, friend, all children experience both positive and negative feelings toward their brothers and sisters at different times of their lives. And listen, a parent's response to a child's emotion plays a large part in helping that child to learn to deal with his feelings and to get along with others. What's a parent to do, though, when words are flying and fists are flailing? Should you jump into the middle of every argument, or just let the kids battle it out and let the chips fall as they may? Well, the first thing to keep in mind when the fracas becomes overpowering in the next room is this. Each fight can become a learning experience for the children. That's right. Listen, parents. While you may be tempted to rush into the room, cast blame, bark out commands, hold off. Make an effort to walk into that room calmly. If necessary, separate the children until they can cool down, give them each some time in their rooms, then begin the process of working through the problem. And here's how. Listen calmly. That's right, listen calmly to what each child has to say. Let them talk. In fact, encourage the children to express their points of view. And here's a new one. Solicit their help in reaching solutions. Now, how does this work? Well, say the children are fighting over a toy. You might try this. Try taking the toy away and asking the children to come up with a plan before you return it. Okay, children, you decide. Who gets to use this first? And who will get it second? In other words, let them work together to come up with an idea that is mutually satisfactory. Now, why take all the time to settle a fuss in this way? Ah, this is very important. You know what the experts are saying? This way of dealing with problems gives children, your children, important practice in life skills that are the basis of all human relationships. Did you catch that? It's important, you see, for kids to learn to express their views, listen to the other person's views too, and find a common ground. Now, sometimes you can motivate kids to settle their own conflicts by offering them a choice. For example, if 5-year-old Johnny and 7-year-old Roger are fighting over who gets to sit in the front seat of the car on the way to the park, you might say, can you settle this problem, or should we forget the trip to the park? You see, whenever possible, let the children take ownership of the problem. If they can't seem to work things out, play the role of a facilitator, but not a judge. Now, why shouldn't a parent just rush in and solve everything? Well, first of all, you may not be as objective as you think you are. In fact, research shows that parents routinely hold the older child accountable. That's right, even in cases when the younger child is actually at fault. So be careful not to make assumptions, especially when you're not even in the room when the conflict begins. One mother looked out the window to see her older son squirting his younger brother with the hose. And she rushed out, punished the older boy, and rewarded the younger with a popsicle. Later, she discovered that it had been the younger boy who had started the conflict. He had turned the hose on his big brother just for laughs. And when the big brother decided to return tit for tat, well, the mother just happened to walk by the window. Instantly, she assumed that her older son was teasing his little brother again. So, you see, be careful. Be careful not to fall into the trap of stereotyping your children and assuming who is right and who is wrong in any situation. You might be surprised to find out that your snap judgments might be pretty far from reality. Well, another reason you should avoid jumping in and solving your children's problems is that kids need a chance to work out their own problems. I mean, how else can they learn how to get along in life? So listen, parents, don't run in and settle every dispute by sheer force of being an adult. Give your children the tools they need for resolving their own conflicts. Let them know that everybody disagrees once in a while. Then lay some ground rules for fair fighting in your home. Boy, this is important. Lay down some ground rules for fighting. First of all, establish the fact that physical aggression, it's out. Let your children know that nobody ever solved a problem by hurting somebody else. And tell them that no matter how angry they might feel, hitting, punching, and kicking are unacceptable. Whenever a child engages in these actions, parents, separate him from the rest of the family until he's able to get control. But don't stop there. You see, it's vitally important that the child work through the steps of what has been happening. And once that child is calmed down enough to communicate clearly, ask him to tell you what happened. And parents, listen very carefully and show that you're concerned. Agree on any point that you can. If Jimmy says he's frustrated because his little brother always knocks down his castles, nod your head. Let him know that you'd be frustrated if somebody destroyed your work, too. Then ask him what he might do next time to solve the problem. Encourage any attempts on his part to come up with solutions. By walking through a problem, replaying it, and suggesting an alternative ending, you see, you can help your child learn to problem solve. Oh, and something else. Encourage your children to use words when they're angry. Let them know it's okay to be annoyed and frustrated, but it's not okay to hit or call names. Help them learn to keep the focus on solving the problem, not on hurting their brother or sister. Of course, no child will become a peacemaker overnight. But parents, don't despair. Sometimes it may seem as if your little ones are in an emotional coma. No matter how much you try to impress your values upon them, they just don't seem to get it. Friend, keep trying. Good parenting requires an enormous amount of vision and optimism. When your children, parents, sense that you have confidence in them, you see, they develop confidence in themselves and in their own abilities to solve problems. Sometimes it's amazing to see just how far children will stretch to get along when they can see a clear benefit. Now, listen up, parents. Some evening when your children are having a hard time getting along, try this experiment. Tell them they can stay up as long as they like on one condition. They must get along. Let them know that if anybody comes to you and tells, it will instantly become bedtime. No questions will be asked. So if you begin to hear voices being raised while the children are playing, simply enter the room and ask, "Is there a problem here?" Now, more likely than not, the children will assure you that everything's fine, then quickly whisper together as they call a truce. But if you doubt the effectiveness of this method, I'd like to just ask you to give it a try. Perhaps the children will only stay up for 5 or 10 minutes the first night, but as they catch on to the rules of the game, you'll be surprised at how effective they can become at solving their own conflicts. Once children realize that their actions lead to natural consequences, they tend to modify their behavior. One elementary school teacher found that her children were fighting over the baseball game every recess period. She finally told them that as far as she was concerned, they could stay out for recess all afternoon. There was only one condition. Once they began fighting, recess would be over. The first day recess lasted for 5 minutes. As a boy slid onto first base, he was tagged. Well, instantly, shouts of, "Out! No, I'm safe! No, we're out! Safe!" could be heard throughout the schoolyard. "Okay," said the teacher, making herself heard above the din. "Recess is over." Well, the children were shocked, but they caught on. By the end of 1 month, recess was lasting an hour. You know what, parents? Children have a marvelous capacity for making a success of things, if we'll only give them a chance.
And those hour-long recesses can be kind of nice, too, can't they? You know, the Bible so often talks about the peace and harmony that can exist among Christians, and we believe it's God's plan for that atmosphere to prevail in our homes as well. Don't you agree? Friend, this is HMS Richards Jr. again, thanking you for joining us today, reminding you once more about that free gift, the Better Living Booklet, How You Can Become a Better Parent. This delightful book by Ann Woods Bell contains material on discipline, the famous 6 levels of emotional growth, communication, and much more. And you heard right, there's absolutely no charge for this book. Even though today is April Fool's Day, we really mean what we say. For your free copy of How You Can Become a Better Parent, write that letter today to the Voice of Prophecy, Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. That's Box 55, Los Angeles, 90053. For our Canadian listeners, Box 2127, Oshawa, Ontario, L187V4. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-872-0055. That number again, 1-800-872-0055. And by the way, friend, please remember to include the call letters of this station when you write or call. Tomorrow we want you to be sure to join us again at the same time as Lonnie presents Part 2, Natural Consequences. How can we as parents and sometimes even grandparents lead and discipline children in a way that's appropriate and positive? How can a parent come up with disciplinary measures that are the natural consequences of a child's behavior? Well, you want to be sure and join us then. And remember, too, every Thursday morning is Voice of Prophecy World Prayer Day. Our prayer circle meets and we pray for your special requests. Be sure and send them to us. We'd like to pray with you. Remember, too, to invite your friends to contact us sometime. This is HMS Richards Jr. for Lonnie Miloshenko. Friend, remember, it's still true. Yes, God loves you.
When she was only 12 years old, Lori Berenson wanted to skip summer camp so she could get a job and earn some money to send overseas to foster children. During high school, she volunteered at a soup kitchen and a blood bank. She studied anthropology at MIT, then spent 5 years working for human rights groups in Nicaragua and El Salvador. In 1994, she moved to Peru. Then in 1996, she was sentenced to life in prison for her involvement in a Marxist group with a history of bank robberies, kidnappings, and bombings. What happened? How could someone who cared so deeply about people join a group that robs, kidnaps, and kills? My guess is Lori turned the Second Commandment into the first. Her beloved peasants became more important to her than God. Her love for them turned into hatred of anyone who stood in the way of her plans to help them. Lori lost confidence in God and was trapped by hate. We were made to love, and love compels us to actively resist injustice, to invest our lives in the needs and hurts of people. But in a broken world, the best way to keep our love whole is to love God most of all. For the Voice of Prophecy and the Seventh-day Adventist Church, this is John McLarty.